Hello, welcome to In Conversation with a podcast for The Lancet Healthy Longevity. It's August 2021, and I'm Gavin Cleaver. Societies are aging fast, but when we consider how countries are adapting to a rapidly aging population, we don't often consider the gender differences inherent in how different policies affect different people. Professor Jack Rowe is one of the authors of a new paper looking at this, which happens to be in our new August 2021 issue. The paper is called Gender Differences in Countries' Adaptation to Societal Aging, International Cross-Sectional Comparison. It is, of course, free to read online, as is all of our content here at The Lancet Healthy Longevity, and I'm very pleased to be joined today by Professor Rowe to talk about his work. Professor Rowe, when we think about gender when assessing the effects of an aging population, what are the crucial things to bear in mind?
Well, there are several very important differences between older men and older women that may be susceptible to new policies or programs. For instance, first of all, women, of course, live longer than men. Globally, slightly over 4 years longer. In developed countries such as the OECD, 3.3 years longer. And since they outlive their husbands or partners, they tend to live alone longer. And thus, they're at greater risk for loneliness and isolation. They also have poorer health than men. Women have more chronic diseases. They spend more money on health care, particularly out-of-pocket expenses. They participate much less in the labor force. And when they do have jobs, they often have lower salaries. So they are at greater economic risk. Their pensions are generally lower when they have them. They play different roles in many cases, not in all cases, but in many cases, much more caregiving, often child rearing for grandchildren. And so we felt that we had done our group, the Aging Society Research Network, had done a fair amount of work developing an index which permitted us to assess the lived experiences of older persons across a number of specific important domains in different countries. And as we continued to work in this area, it became clear to us that it was really important for us to drill down and to separate the lived experiences of women from those of men to see if we could identify some policy or program gaps.
So your article, looking at different countries' adaptations, why is it important to look at these gender differences in aging at a societal level? And as well, I guess, broadly, how do you define a successfully aging society?
We have spent in this field a very considerable amount of time studying individuals as they age. And it became clear to us that now that there are so many old people, that the unit of analysis should not just be older individuals, but it should be the society. Because the facts are that the context matters an awful lot in influencing the likelihood that an individual can age successfully. You might have good health and exercise and good diet and good education and even a good job, but you're in a lousy environment with no adequate housing and no adequate health care and no adequate retirement income and no transportation, et cetera, you're going to find it much harder to age successfully. So we're trying to add the context now. As to how one would define a successfully aging society, we, of course, have our own definition, and other scholars may have their own definition, but we identified five major domains. And when I say we, this is an interdisciplinary group of 14 scholars from different universities in Europe and the United States who have been working together now for over a decade on aging society issues. We say a successfully aging society is one in which older individuals can be productive and engaged, either in work for pay or in volunteering, that those opportunities are available. We say it's a society in which older individuals are living well in terms of their general well-being, their health, their active life expectancy, how many years they're living without disability. It's a society which is equitable, and that is in which the distribution of resources within the older population is fairly even, rather than large groups of haves and large groups of have-nots. It's a society which is cohesive. And when we talk about cohesion, we're talking about intergenerational issues. A society in which older individuals and younger individuals are interacting in their homes, cohabiting, in their societies, in their communities. And finally, it's a society in which older individuals are secure. And they're secure not only financially, but they're also secure personally. They feel safe. And so those five dimensions are what we roll up into what we call our aging society index. And we measure that by countries. And we started in the OECD. We're now currently doing this in Asia as well. Of course, Japan is in the OECD, but other Asian countries, not so much. And so what we did in the study that we're discussing today is we calculated that index for men and for women. There's a methodological issue here because women live longer than men. We had to correct for that methodologically, which we feel we did in a robust way, and the reviewers agreed. So we feel that life expectancy differential is not driving these results, that these results actually reflect the lived experiences of men and women in these countries.
Yeah, this aging society index is really fascinating idea. Are there any kind of limitations of it? Do you think that should be bared in mind by people reading the article?
Well, I think the greatest limitations relate to two things. One is, of course, it is a set of, in this particular paper, 18 and other papers, different numbers, countries, not 150 countries. And there are many regions of the world that aren't represented. And there are really no representation from low and middle income countries, which is a very important thing to do. But you have to start somewhere, and you certainly have to start where the data are available. And the kind of data that we need to collect and put together and interrogate are generally not available in many low and middle income countries. The second limitation is an important one, and that is that this is a cross-sectional study. This is a snapshot. And all our data were collected between 2015 and 2019. What you really want is you want to know what the trends are. You really want to follow countries over time. Which ones are doing better? Which ones are falling behind? Which ones show a gap between men and women widening or narrowing? And obviously, we plan to do that, but you have to start somewhere, and then we started with this cross-sectional analysis.
So I guess that leads us on to the big question then. What were some of the key findings of your study? And I guess going forward, how do you kind of hope this will inform policy and healthcare for obviously societies which are rapidly aging now?
Well, the key finding is that even after adjusting for differences in life expectancy, men are favored over women in every country. They are having a more favorable lived experience. That means they're more productive, they're more engaged, greater well-being, more cohesive with other generations, more financially secure, they feel safer, etc. All the way across the board. Now, the differences between men and women varied from country to country, and we think it's really important to do a multi-country study because what you really want to be able to do is learn lessons from other countries that may have aged ahead of you. So, for instance, if you look at Germany now in terms of their demography, their proportion of the elderly, they pretty much look exactly like the U.S. is going to look in 15 years, 20 years. So they aged ahead of us. So maybe they've had some policies that work and policies that didn't work, and we can learn some lessons. So if you start looking across countries, you find that the gender differences are greatest in the Netherlands and Germany and Italy, whereas they're the least actually, in Ireland and Spain, and interestingly, Poland. So what we hope to do now is try to look at the policies in those countries and see whether why it is. And we actually know, of course, which domains were important in determining those differences. So we can drill down and say, was it employment or was it a social insurance program? Or was it something about the healthcare system, et cetera, that permitted older men and women to have similar lived experiences? So those are our major findings. We also found that the magnitude of the gender difference didn't seem to be related to geographic location or developmental status. So there are some countries in the OECD that are less well developed than the United States or the UK or, for instance, Hungary. And the other general thing that you find when you do these this kind of analysis, and we found this before for the countrywide analysis, and it holds for this too, is that basically the countries that do the best as a group, even though it is not a strong geographic orientation, they're pretty much the countries that are on the podium at the Winter Olympics. You know, it's Denmark and Sweden. Norway tend to have the stronger social programs, and that drives some of these findings.
Thank you, Jack, for speaking with The Lancet Healthy Longevity today. You can read Professor Rowe's paper online now at thelancet.com for free, of course, and you can also subscribe to this podcast, In Conversation With, on any of your usual platforms. We've even made a helpful website for you. If you go to thelancethealthylongevity.buzzsprout.com, you'll find all the links to subscribe to the platform of your choice. Thanks for listening to In Conversation With, a podcast for The Lancet Healthy Longevity, and we hope to have you back with us in a month's time for our next episode and issue.